Welcome into the Thunder Basketball Universe presented by Coop Ale Works. The Thunder has played three games since our last podcast, so we've got some catching up to do. And Gallo, I say we just dive right into You Can Say That Again so we can start covering some of this. What do you say?
That sounds great to me.
All right, you go first.
All right, here's the quote. They want to work so bad and so hard, and that's what we like here.
That's Lou.
That is Lou. And it's Lou talking about the rookie class. Who had an incredible standout night against the Denver Nuggets. It was just a little bit not quite enough for the Thunder in that game. Made a valiant comeback from 18 points down. Actually retook the lead against the division rival Nuggets, but came up just a couple possessions shy. But the four rookies combined for 38 points, 13 rebounds, 18 assists, and 7 steals in that game. And what stood out to me about the quote from Lou is he's really not that far removed from being a rookie himself in his third year. And Lou, the way that he said that took so much ownership of the culture of the organization. He said, and that's what we like here. Like what we like,
yeah.
You know, and I just thought that that was really telling that this is clearly an inclusive project that's happening right now, and that guys like Lou Dort don't feel like an Aaron Wiggins who plays the same position as him, plays a similar style to him, is like in any way a threat towards playing time. It is full on like encouragement of the development of the entirety of the roster. And what they want to see are the foundational qualities that have helped elevate some of these core players: Shea, Lou, Darius, Mike Muscala, like Kenny Hustle, Kendrick Williams. Yeah. You know, like those types of foundational qualities are what they are trying to imbue upon these four rookies as well.
Yeah. It's really a we're all in this together mentality, for just lack of a better phrase. But also it's very symbiotic, right? The Thunder, everybody that's not a rookie recognizes the value that these rookies have and how important they are to the organization and how important it is to feed into them, encourage them, and, you know, kind of wrap your arms around them and help them in any way that you can so that they can continue to grow and, you know, help build, you know, this next iteration of Thunder basketball. The one thing I did want to point out about the rookies was Aaron Wiggins and Trey Mann both came off the bench for the Thunder in this game against Denver. Now, before that, Aaron had, I think, started 8 games straight for
the
Thunder.
That's right. Yeah, he's 11 total starts this season. Yeah.
Right. And so he came off the bench for the first time in about 8 games, and he still was the same Aaron Wiggins, high energy, just bringing the punch on both ends of the floor. One play, we're just going to break this down right now, because this was this was the most high-level play, and this goes into my You Can Say That Again, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. So Trey Mann, and the Thunder's going up against Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets. Big.
Reigning MVP.
Physical. Yeah. Reigning MVP. Just a big veteran team. Nikola Jokic thought he had a clean rebound. He had just skied over. He thought. He's 7 feet tall, and his wingspan just reaches. He could probably dunk without jumping. Like, he reached up, grabbed this rebound. But as soon as he brought it down by his face, there was some resistance there. And that's because Trey Mann just went in there, both arms, just and hugged the basketball and just tried to wrestle it away from Nikola Jokic. He was successful because he brought a lot of energy and intensity to that play. As soon as he cleared Jokic and he turned around, he was on a 3-on-2 break on the other end of the floor. To his left, he had Josh Giddey. And to his right, he had Aaron Wiggins. And there were two defenders in front of him. He took a couple of dribbles and just whipped the ball behind his back to Aaron Wiggins for a one-handed slam. And then the next thing you know, it was a timeout. There was mayhem in Paycom Center. Things were going crazy.
Yeah. The thing that capped off the play for me, you know how much I love this, is Trey gave Aaron one of those little like jumps in the air of moral encouragement. You know,
that is Gallo's favorite thing.
The sympathy jump of like, I am jumping with you to just get you that little extra inch of vertical off the ground. I love that so much. It's just such a instinctual basketball thing to do. But, you know, speaking of instinctual basketball plays, Paris, you're a guard. I was a guard when I played, and that's the type of play that Trey Mann has to make to be an impact player on both ends of the floor. And he recognized as soon as that ball came down below shoulder length, shoulder height, he had to go get it, and he had to be fierce about it. And those are the types of plays that are going to keep him on the floor.
Let me go ahead and just say, Mike, you can say that again, and we can continue this conversation. So mine is get in the fight, rip his arm off. This is sort of a You Can Say That Again inception quote.
Yeah.
Because the guy who said this was Trey Mann, but he was quoting Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who told him earlier in the game, you see what I just did there? Because Shea had just had a pretty similar play of, right, you know, going in there and just getting nasty for a rebound and ripping the ball away. And he looked at Trey and he said, you see that? Get in there, rip his arm off.
Yeah, and that's what Trey did. I love, first of all, I love that that is happening in the middle mm-hmm. of the game and that Shea is like finding a moment to create a little teaching point for Trey, like as the game is going on. But the coolest thing was when Trey walks off the floor, Denver calls timeout immediately after that Wiggins dunk and Trey's behind the back lefty pass. And as Trey's walking back to the floor, Shea kind of gives him a little smack on the butt and it walks like maybe a step behind him and just has this, such a proud smile on his face. Yeah. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of this wry smile of like, you know, my kid is growing up a little bit. Like,
young
Pooja. Yeah, exactly. Like, and it was just, that was really cool to see because Shea didn't have a good night and he's having a little bit of a, you know, a stretch here where he's mm-hmm. continuing to explore his game, expand his game. And as a result, he's not shooting it as well as he has in the past. And so for Shea to be so completely invested and involved in everything else that's going on and helping his team in a variety of other ways, I mean, it just goes to show what we I've already known about this guy.
And it's not just Shea who has been encouraging Trey to just, you know, play with a little bit more of an edge, especially defensively. It's the coaching staff, obviously. Yeah. Mark Daigneault post-game, that was, you know, when we were talking about that play from Trey, it was the fact that he ripped the ball away from Jokic. That by itself, if he didn't do the behind-the-back pass, if Aaron hadn't finished with the dunk, that would have been enough for Mark Daigneault to yeah. just fist bump of approval. Like, yes, great drop. Great job, Trey. Because earlier, I think it was the Dallas game he mentioned where, you know, Trey was in the game defensively and Moses Brown kind of went up for an easy layup mm-hmm. or something like that. And Trey just kind of like half-hearted, maybe just like a little swipe and
Moses Mark called it, he kissed him on the cheek. That's is the way right. that Mark said
that's
it.
That's right. That's right. The one-liners, man, they I know, stick with yeah. you. They stick with you. And it wasn't, you're not going to do anything to a 7-footer Moses Brown if right. you just like half-heartedly one arm in there to try to deter him. And so the point was, Trey, we're not asking you to go in and block Moses' shot.
No.
We're not asking you to go in there and grab a steal every single time. We're asking you to make it difficult. And if the opportunity presents itself for you to go get the ball, go get the ball.
Yes.
And so seeing that translate in this Denver game in real time where before, like, I don't know how many possessions ahead of that, Shea had just done the same thing and been like, Trey, you mm-hmm. see that? And then Trey finally got the opportunity against Nikola Jokic of all players. I feel like that is another very developmental point that'll stick with Trey for a long time. One of those flashpoint just kind of opportunities where, remember that time you ripped the ball away right. from Nikola Jokic? We need that Trey right now.
And I think that kind of it's a perfect tie-in to my quote as well, which is those four rookies, they put up this stat line. They had this type of performance against a high-level right. Western Conference team with a guy that's the reigning MVP and a team that fully expects when it's healthy to be mm-hmm. one of the premier teams in the Western Conference. So more kudos there. Paris, I do want to ask you just about your experience in those guard situations. I know, like, being one of the smaller guys on the floor, mm-hmm. you have to work harder and you have to work smarter. Mm-hmm. You have to front the post and you have to continue to move your feet all the time to prevent those entry passes. You've got to be fierce. You've got to learn how to twist the ball away when you have a tie-up potential situation. Like, what are some of the things that you learned about being in those positions?
I learned that I could get away with a lot of stuff because I was smaller. And I always got really excited when I was cross-matched with mm-hmm. a post player because obviously they would be right around like the 5'11", 6-foot range and me, 5'8", you know, 5'9" with some shoes on. But I would
with those heels during our pregame show sometimes yeah. is like 5'11".
Yeah. I could be a post player, who knows? But I would just keep moving. You have to keep your feet moving when you're playing against a big post player because you don't want to allow a clean look mm-hmm. in there. And then once they get the ball and they're back to the basket, they're in their element and they can get comfortable. They can get set. They can do what they want to do. You just can't let them get to that point. So I would, you know, dance a little bit, the high side, low side. I would, you know, jump in front. But then I would also, when they got the ball, just swipe a lot. I would be relentless about it because I knew that, you know, a lot of the times I could get away with that stuff. But even if I didn't get away with it and I fouled that post player, they knew that if just because they're cross-matched on me doesn't mean that I'm just going to lay there and right. let them have it. So it was actually kind of fun for me. I looked forward to those opportunities to be, you know, a little extra feisty.
I loved them too because it creates when you're moving the feet the way that you're talking about. And we see NBA players do this all the time. Kendrick Williams is great at this.
Right.
You know, Chris Paul is actually incredible at this when he's matched up on big guys. When you're constantly moving like that, it creates this paralysis by analysis for the guard and for the big, who, when they see that mismatch, it's just like candy, and they feel like they have, we got to get the ball
in
there.
It's like tunnel vision.
Exactly. Yeah. And then when you're moving so much, it's disrupting the angles of the pass, and the guard is trying to figure out, okay, exactly how can I get this pass in? And they're so dead set on it that it actually completely bogs down the offense, the movement stops, and the shot clock starts dwindling.
And the other thing too, especially if they're just locked in on getting the post player the ball, now all of your teammates know that they can help.
Right.
They can help over. So if you add that little extra time for the guard to be like, okay, do I need to throw a low hand or do I need to get it to the high hand? Do I need to do a bounce pass here? Now your post player, who's probably cross-matched on the other side of the floor, can start helping over. And even if they do get the ball, you're likely able to have a double team and a little bit of help there.
And the guard's picked up his dribble.
Exactly.
And so the guy that's pressuring the ball can really be inside that guy's jersey.
But it doesn't happen if you're not feisty.
Exactly.
And you're not moving your feet. So I personally, I loved those opportunities. Especially in practice, the post players just did not like it when I was on them. Like, oh, Paris.
Yeah,
darn
not
it.
Again.
God,
not
this again. Chick again. Okay, let's go into Name That Dude. Gallo, I've been staring at this for your stat for a minute now, and I'm not going to lie, I'm struggling.
Well, the problem is it's Name That Dudes. And the stat is 22 for 37, which is 59.5%. And that is the Thunder's bench units shooting numbers.
I was going to guess that, but it didn't seem like a big enough number.
That was the Thunder's bench units shooting numbers in the game against Denver. So
that's what I was. Yeah. I had a little thought that it might be that number. Okay. I had a thought.
Yeah. So the Thunder's bench really revived the game for OKC. I mean, it was an 18-point deficit early. Denver was all over the Thunder in the first few minutes of that game, 22-4 lead, I think. And Austin Rivers had it going. He was bombing threes. He had a season high in threes. But that second unit really came to play. And everybody in that second group, I think, scored at least 7 points. Mm-hmm. And it was just a really nice, balanced effort. And when it got to halftime, you know, I remember just thinking, like, there's a lot of basketball still left to be played. The Thunder was down double digits, but the way that second quarter went, and knowing that Denver was the lowest scoring second half team in the league and had the best second quarter scoring margin and differential in the league, and the fact that the Thunder actually outscored Denver in that second quarter, that really said to me, like, this game got flipped from an energy standpoint. It was really the second unit that did it.
It was the energy that stood out for me, especially after that, just that start to the game, that first quarter. It just seemed like the Thunder, they were doing the right things offensively. The shots just were not falling early on. But it seemed like they just needed something to just kind of revive the energy. Because if the shot's not falling, it's really, really hard to just get your energy and intensity into the game. And the second unit, it felt like they strung together just a couple of high-energy hustle plays. And those sort of things can spark offense just as much as like a step-back three, late shot clock buzzer-beating, you know, shot. If Kenrich Williams swoops in there to like snag an offensive rebound and kick it back out for another three-point opportunity, that's just as high energy of a hustle play as, you know, like I said, like a step back three at the buzzer. Right. Like, those are the sort of things that we saw from that second unit. Kenrich Williams, Darius Bazley, Aaron Wiggins, Trey Mann, all of those guys just coming in there, diving on the floor for loose ball, scooping up those second chances, and also getting stops defensively and creating those run out opportunities.
Yeah, even that sequence at the end of the first quarter when Trey Mann hits the pull up three,
right,
and then Aaron Wiggins makes a steal on the sideline and like gets the ball back to Trey, and there's almost no time left on the clock, and Trey's second three goes up, and it like almost goes. I mean, that almost going in a home game, like at Paycom Center. Now, if the shot had gone in, it would be even more momentum. But like, even that little 5 second sequence is a game changer just in terms of the energy in the building. And one other guy that I wanted to point out who was the sixth man in the game was Darius Bazley. Mm-hmm. And we keep talking about the exploration of the team, of the roster, of each individual player. We talk about, you know, Shea continuing to work on that step back and trying to get defenses to really respect that because it opens up everything, everything else for him. Well, Darius, like, we're continuing to explore and see what his game is all about.
Yeah.
And We've seen him as a starter. We've seen him as more of like a deep reserve, a guy that's coming in a little bit later off the bench. And last night he was the first player off the bench, played 24 minutes, 10 points, 5 rebounds, 3 blocks, really efficient shooting, especially from 2-point range. He was 5 of 6 on twos. And when he's playing that simple game, he can be excellent. And you know, we don't know. We probably will see him back in the starting lineup at some point, but these are all just great exploratory moments because we don't know what the long-term future iteration of this team is going to be.
Right.
And what Darius's best role on that team might actually become.
Right.
And so if he's a guy that maybe he's a super sub or maybe he's the sixth man and he's slotting in as the four in some lineups, he's slotting in the five in some lineups like we're seeing in the second unit, that can be an extremely valuable Swiss Army knife.
If we're going to talk Darius Bazley, we got to talk the biggest dunk he's had, or sorry, the biggest block he's had all season long. He prevented a dunk.
And that's including blocks on Rudy Gobert and Giannis Antetokounmpo, but this one was even more emphatic.
Now, it was Jeff Green, who is not necessarily, you know, a Rudy Gobert type of post player or anything like that, but he was skying up for what looked to be kind of an uncontested dunk. I mean, he might have been in a couple bodies around, but he thought it was going to be a clean look. And Darius met him right at the summit of his jump and just completely wiped away any indication that he was going to get that ball through the rim. And it was so forceful, they both fell to the ground after that play. And after that play, and this is the momentum shifting sort of hustle plays that I'm talking about. After that play, Kenrich Williams scooped up the loose change and kicked it ahead to Alexei Pokuševski for a three on the under the floor to bring the Thunder within 1 point at that ball game. That's huge.
Massive momentum swing.
Yeah.
And that's one of those plays that Thunder players have told me are called moment of truth plays that the organization, the coaches talk to these guys about, that when it's time to stand in for a charge and accept contact and accept getting barreled into, when it's time to go up and you might get posterized and you might be on SportsCenter that night for the wrong reasons, like, you still go up and you go after and you attack that shot.
Mm-hmm.
And all season long, Baze has not been afraid to go into those moments. He maybe hasn't come out on the right end of them sometimes, but he has not been afraid to go challenge shots, go up to the rim. He had one last night. He didn't get a piece of it, but I swear that if he had gotten a piece of this shot,
I know what you're talking about.
It would have cleared all the way to the other end of the floor.
I know exactly.
It would have gone 94 feet.
Like, I just saw his arm go like clear across his chest, it was like above the rim.
It was like a Roger Federer forehand, yes. The way that he spotted that, tried to swing at that shot.
Accurate.
But that's the level of aggression that they need to see from these guys. And,
yeah.
You know, frankly, Poku had some plays like that too. He didn't have this like massive stat line, but the two defensive rebounds that Poku had in that game were absolute monsters.
Yeah.
He rose up above everybody, snatched them, reeled it in, secured it with two hands, and sealed off the possession.
Right.
And you have to have those types of emphatic moments when you're a bench unit and you're trying to claw back into a game.
You know who's been really good, and just going back to the conversation about blocks, who's been really good at just like sticking their nose in those opportunities this season has been Mike Muscala.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's known for his just like straight up verticality and like being disciplined at the rim of like, even if you dunk this ball on me, I am going to go straight up and down and you're going to have to work for it. He's had a couple of those this season, but he's also averaging a career high in blocks kind of quietly.
Yeah.
It's slight, 1.7 this season. And over the past, I think, 4 or 5 games, I think before the Denver game, the stat line was he's averaging right under 2.
And that would put him in like the top 10, 12, 15 in the NBA.
But it's not like he's doing anything particularly different. It's that a lot of those vertical contests at the rim are just resulting in blocks.
So should we tell the people why?
We need to tell the people. We got to tell the people.
So before the game yesterday, we talked to Mike Muscala, and you brought this up. You asked him, you know, what's going on with like this increase in block shots. And he told us this summer he worked on his jumping.
Yes.
And, you know, that's just not something that you hear NBA players talk about that often.
Yes. Like, so I feel
especially
like
a guy like Mike Muscala, who's 30 years old
right.
and like not, you know, a high riser by any means. But
yeah.
this is pretty cool to me. And it also showed like some of the unglamorous side of like what it takes to be an NBA player is like you literally go into a weight room and you just practice jumping.
So this is something I'm not – full disclosure, when Mike said this after my question, I just kind of like left it there because in my head I'm like, okay, he worked on jumping. Yeah. Like, yeah, it was part of his workout routine. Cool. But Nick Gallo, the great 10-year veteran that he is, followed back and circled back on it. And I'm really glad you did because it went more into – as a veteran in this league who has obviously established himself as a great pick and pop player, you got great discipline, verticality at the rim. You're not going to necessarily expand your game mm-hmm. as much as you are going to like add more depth to your game.
Yep.
And so he has done a great job, and this is a great example of this, of just fine tuning the nuances of the game. He's not working on like his forehand and backhand to like get more blocks. No, he's working on his jumping so he's more comfortable lifting off the ground and landing so that, you know, that little 1% has now maybe translated into more blocks for him this season.
And this is why when you're a tight, cohesive team that's all on the same page, guys almost know exactly what moments of the game they're going to be called upon to react in. Mm-hmm. And so like, just like in a band, right? Like, the bass player knows when he's supposed to strum the bass line. They're not expecting the electric solo from him or like the, for him to play the drums. Like, he's got to play the bass.
Right.
So the Thunder is not expecting Mike Muscala to come over in, you know, weak side and swat shots with these like, you know, help side reaching like, you know, massive plays. And they're not expecting him to come out and switch defensively. They're asking him to step over, stand vertical, leap straight up in the air. So that's what he's practicing. Mm-hmm. He's not practicing coming out to the level of the screen, switching, and then ISO one-on-one basketball against Kyrie Irving.
Yeah. It's something that Mark Daigneault has given a lot of compliments to a lot of the guys on the team about this, but being aggressive within your role and expanding within your role. Mike's done a great job of that. Kenrich has really done it like a fantastic job of that. And Aaron Wiggins is starting to show that he can do that as well. Just be really aggressive and really forceful and competitive within his role.
You don't see any of those guys taking shots that you don't expect them to take.
Right.
You know, like Kenrich isn't going rogue and like, you know, doing something wild. He's finding a few core spots that he is confident that he can hit those shots, and the team knows that he can take and hit those shots. And that's important for your defense too, because if a guy takes an unexpected shot, nobody's ready to rush back down court in transition defense.
Exactly. All works together, both ends of the floor and all five guys on the floor, obviously, but very symbiotic relationship. Okay. Here is my name that dude. I'm rounding up these numbers, so you already know that it's
okay,
not
so these are averages.
These are averages.
All right, so I was
sorry. And I have to change the numbers on the rundown because they've been updated.
Okay, all right.
8 points, 2 steals, 6 rebounds, 3 offensive rebounds, 55% from the field.
Is this Kenrich Williams since we've last podcasted?
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Nice.
That's impressive. I was not expecting you to get that. Okay, yes. This is Kenrich Williams over the past 3 games. And when we're talking about Kenrich, the word that just comes to mind for me after you get through hustle is consistency. And, like, in every element of his game, particularly on the defensive end, Kenrich just continued. The reason I wanted to do the average was because you see the steals, and that's something that, I mean,
it's a really high number. I mean, to have that many steals per game. The reason I got it, though, is because everything else looks like a Kenny Hustle stat line.
Well, it's a stat-stuffing performance from Kenrich Williams over these past 3 games. And then, like, that's what he does. He impacts the game on a multitude of levels. The other thing that I really wanted to point out were the 3 offensive rebounds per game. Kenrich is so sneaky with this because in games – yes, he'll have some loud offensive rebounds. I remember, I think it was the second half in the Denver game, Kenrich pulled down an offensive rebound, and I was like, wow, that had to have been like the 4th offensive rebound for Kenrich. It was his first one of the night.
Right.
But that's because what I saw was Kenrich just all over the offensive glass, tipping balls this way and that way, and like maybe it went out of bounds or maybe the defense grabbed it. But Kenrich was in the mix.
He kept like 4 or 5 of those alive. The one that stood out to me, the offensive rebound of the night against Denver, was Kenrich somehow tracking the flight of the ball. Yep. It was an air ball three by the Thunder. Kendrick fought from the left block.
Yep.
With like locked up with his man, found his way all the way across to the right side of the rim, down mm-hmm. to the right block, jumped up into the air, grabbed the ball, and put it up in off the glass before the shot clock expired, all in one motion. I still have no idea how he was able to recognize the exact flight of the ball, get through all the traffic, get there, jump up in the air, toss it back in one fell swoop.
And when I saw this play, because I think I looked up at the last second, all I saw was Kendrick in midair, like putting the ball back through the hoop. And I was like, where did he come from?
Yeah,
That's what Kendrick does. He just kind of like pops up out of nowhere. But it's because he's always looking for little small creases and little kind of gaps in offense and defense where he can make an impact and kind of make some noise and help out his teammates.
It's why he's developed the reputation that he has. He's one of the most respected players yep. on the Thunder roster. He is earning more and more respect nationally as mm-hmm. well. You just, you can't help but be so happy to see what's happened with Kendrick Williams in yeah. his career. And the fact of the matter is, you know, we no idea like what exactly things were like for him in New Orleans. I have not watched enough of the tape to see like what mm-hmm. his roles were in those situations, but he has told us, you know, a big part of it is just feeling comfortable and not feeling like, I mean, we had him on this show mm-hmm. and he told us like, when you don't feel like you're going to get pulled, when you miss a few shots or make a couple mistakes, like that gives you so much freedom and confidence out there on the floor. And the amount of pride he's been able to take in his performance, the amount of confidence he's been able to walk onto the floor with each time
yep.
that he's been on the court in OKC. I think there's some good chemistry that's occurred here, and it's only going to help him in his career long term.
Speaking of good chemistry, we have seen, if you just watch Kendrick Williams on the floor, not just his play, like within on the court, just kind of keep an eye on him throughout the game. His energy, just like he's just naturally just energetic and brings a lot of just like verve to the team. He will be just clapping. He'll be encouraging guys. He'll pull guys aside yeah. and just kind of get in their ear. And that small thing leads to, you know, a hustle play that we didn't see before from maybe a rookie or, you know, the guys just like diving on the floor for a loose ball. But Kendrick has an effect there with just his energy, and obviously guys respect him and listen to him. And he's always in somebody's ear. He's always doing something, even if he's not on the court.
Yeah, it's interesting because he's not a talker. I mean,
no.
He's a very quiet-natured person, but I think when he does say something, people listen.
Yeah, and he told us on the podcast that he just loves coming into work every
yeah.
day.
And
when you love what you do, it's not work at all. It's like this podcast.
That's right. That's right, Paris. It is exactly like that.
All right, we're going to take a short break right here, and we'll be right back right after this.
Coop Ale Works is the proud sponsor of Thunder Basketball Universe. Brewers of the fan favorites F5 IPA and 99 calorie Ice Chest IPA. You'll find those and many more Coop beers at retailers across Oklahoma. Learn more at CoopLWorks.com.
It is now that point in the podcast where we want to bless your timeline, and something absolutely fantastic happened during the broadcast yesterday. If you weren't watching, I'll give you a little bit of a replay. Every broadcast, we have a section called News and Notes, and we go through kind of the news and notes around the league. You know, if a player returned to action after missing, or if a player had an injury, health and safety protocols, things along those lines. We had one of the best news and notes in the broadcast yesterday, and it was Nick Gallo celebrating 10 years with the Thunder organization. You heard me right. A decade of Thunder Nick Gallo with the Thunder.
Yeah, it's an incredible honor. I can't believe that it's been 10 years. As I said on our Bally Sports Oklahoma broadcast, you know, if it had been 10 days instead of 10 years, it still would have been a childhood dream absolutely come true. So it really meant a lot to me. And so major thanks to you and Chris and Michael and our director, Eric Date, our producer, Steve Melton, graphics guy, Chris Josephson, who we shout out on here all the time,
yes.
and everybody in the Bally Sports truck for making that special sweet moment happen on the broadcast. And then also just a big thanks to all of the people in the organization that took a chance on me when I was 23 years old and have given me the opportunities over these years. So it's been an incredible ride, and I can't wait to have more years and more to come. I said it on the broadcast too. Like, it is so much fun to work with you all every single day, show up to the games, feel like I'm in the mix. I love being a part of a team. So this is great.
You are the best teammate ever. And we talked about, you know, vets taking rookies under their wing. That is exactly what has happened here. I came in as a young 22-year-old as well. Nick Gallo helped me along the way. The 3 years, I have loved every single second because of you, Nick Gallo. So thank you for all that you do. And we're talking about blessing your timeline. I want to go to the picture that you posted Twitter. And it was you in a media scrum with Derek Fisher,
That's right. Yeah.
Was that your first media scrum?
It was not my first one, but it was one of the ones that I could actually find a photo of.
Okay. You know?
That was many iPhones ago. And I hadn't quite transferred all of my photos over the course of time. But yeah, that was one I was able to track down. And that was a strange little press conference that was right after the Thunder had signed Derek Fisher as a free agent in the middle of that first, mm-hmm. my first season, which was the year that the Thunder went to the finals. Mm-hmm. And
the lockout year.
That's right. Yeah. So I came on January 9th. There was hiring issues just because teams didn't know exactly when the season was going to start. Right. I was working with the New York Jets the fall of that year and early winter of that year. And so it all kind of coalesced and happened. I found out that I got the job with the Thunder 2 days before Christmas. And so got to have Christmas with my family in New York.
What a great Christmas present.
Oh, it was amazing. My dad and I drove cross country from New Jersey to Oklahoma City. And
that's a 24-hour drive, right?
That's right.
I just looked it up the other day because we're about to go to New York. So I was just curious.
Yeah. And so, showed up in Oklahoma City on New Year's Day. And it was just amazing start to 2012, my first year working in the NBA, and about a week and a half later, I actually had my first day of actual work after I'd gotten myself settled in and all that. So incredible memories. My life has changed so much since being here. Became a husband, became a father, and truly feel like an Oklahoman. So I hope you'll have that same experience, Paris.
Oh yeah, just following your lead, Gallo. That's what I've learned around these parts. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thanks, Paris. And thank you for being such an amazing teammate and partner over these last 3 years, too. The last few years have just been so enjoyable because of that. So thanks.
Always glad to work with you, Nick Gallo, along the way. All right. So we've got to leave you with what's on tap for the Thunder coming down the line before our next podcast. We are actually about to run to the airport right after this podcast. We're recording this on January 10th at the moment. The Thunder plays on Tuesday.
Yep.
Tuesday against the Washington Wizards. And that game is going to be at 6 p.m. Central Time. From there, the team is going to the Big Apple. It's a couple of games out east against Eastern Conference opponents. They're going to play Brooklyn on Thursday. That's going to be a 7:30 p.m. tip-off, so be sure to mark that on your calendars if you plan on tuning in to Bally Sports Oklahoma. We've got you covered there, of course. Stay locked on OKCThunder.com and at OKC Thunder on social media. Follow Nick Gallo on Twitter if you're not already. He's got you covered on all the news and notes happening both pregame and postgame. So
Paris,
be sure to
follow Paris on Instagram too.
She's, we got you covered.
You've got the sights and sounds of everywhere that we're going. Yeah. It's a beautiful photography.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm taking a lot of notes from our social media crew on that one. All right. So that's everything for the Thunder in the next few days. Until then, thank you so much for watching and listening. Be sure to like, rate, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. If you're not listening and watching on YouTube, be sure to go check us out there as well. Thank you so much to our producer, Matt Bishop. And until next time, Thunder up and catch you later.